Discussion time, December 12th, 2018.
Okay, you're live.
You're live. Can we give Joanne the day off? She needs it.
I'm trying.
How are you feeling? She's not feeling good.
She's not gonna talk a lot this morning, so I will try to.
I think we should just tell her.
Are you pleased?
Oh, I'm sure she is.
Okay, welcome to the LaPlata County Board of County Commissioners for discussion time. Is there another way I could put board in this introduction? Today is Wednesday, December 12th, 2018. And for the record, those in the room are myself, Gwen Lackel, County Commissioner.
Laura Warner, Interim Deputy Director of Operations at San Juan Basin Public Health.
Sherry Daggill, also with San Juan Basin Public Health.
Julie Westendorf, County Commissioner.
Chuck Stevens, Assistant County Manager.
Joanne Spina, County Manager.
And Brad Blake.
Brad Blake, here.
County Commissioner. All right, and we have a 30-minute update here from San Juan Basin Health. You can take all of it, or some of it, or whatever you need.
Okay, great. I guess some of that depends on how many questions there are this morning. So I think first order of business is formally introducing myself as going into an interim role as the Deputy Director of Operations at San Juan Basin Public Health. So Flannery O'Neill has moved on to another fantastic opportunity, so I'm helping out for right now. Probably some of you know I began my career as a physician, so I did medical school in Chicago, did an intern or a residency in internal medicine, fellowship in geriatric medicine, and worked for a while as a primary care physician before I moved to public health. So I received a master's in public health from Colorado School of Public Health. Can I say public health more in my Let's give it a try. And then I joined San Juan Basin Public Health in February of last year, 2017. So I started as the Director of Health Promotion Services and then have been in this interim role since, I guess, just the beginning of November. So, so that's just a quick.
Well, and you forgot the most important thing, Laura.
Tell me.
Which is you and I were teammates at the ICS 300-400 training.
Yes.
With Jim Spratlin back in April, which made huge dividends in the 416 fire, so, yeah.
Yes, you're right, that is the most important thing.
We had to spend a week together, side by side.
Yes, and that actually, many fruitful relationships came from that training. So. All right, I also wanted to provide just a quick update on our suicide prevention efforts. In my division director role, I've been quite involved in San Juan Basin Public Health's response to the just kind of overall or longer term increase in suicides in our area. Last week on December 6th, we held a suicide prevention community forum. So really an opportunity just for all comers from the community, whether they be professional stakeholders, community members, to receive some updates on all the different efforts that are going around in the county to reduce suicide attempts and mortality. So it was mainly a panel discussion. We had representatives from the radio station at the college, Resilient Colorado, which is a trauma-informed care training model, the CODI project, which is an arm of 4-H. The Boys and Girls Club of the Southern Indian Tribe, San Juan Basin Public Health, and then also Durango School District 9R. So those individuals gave updates on what their efforts are going on in the community. And then, as I think you're aware, San Juan Basin Public Health is acting in kind of a convening role to try to have some strategy behind all the great work that is going on with various organizations and individuals in the community. So it was well attended. We were at the library, about 50 or so folks were in the audience, and just kind of a discussion of what's going on in the community to work on this. And as you know, it's a long-term issue, so we also talked a lot about what's coming in the future.
Can I ask on that topic, is Kate Jones working for you guys?
Mm-hmm.
And then, so she's Is she like your point person on that coordination, communication stuff?
Oh, we have a team that's working on it. Kate's name is often on our promotional materials in the community as a contact.
So I get emails from Kate about some things, and I'm not like the thing that was. There's a thing at the library, but I think there was something at Mercy recently.
Right.
And how do those tie together?
Yeah, that's actually a great question. So what you are referring to is suicide prevention work that I just talked about, and then the one that's at Mercy. That's a joint meeting between communities that care. That Kate began that process in our community. And Celebrating Healthy Communities, which is another prevention-focused coalition in Durango. So all of these efforts are sort of slowly starting to meld into one giant prevention effort because it's a lot of similar work. And we understand that it tends to be a set of risk factors that people face that then end up with poor outcomes. So, having unstable home life or not being socially connected, things like that tend to result in substance abuse, mental health issues. So, all of these different efforts, tend to be coalition because these are complex problems that require lots of different organizations. So. Addressing those risk factors can prevent a whole host of poor outcomes, poor health outcomes. So those efforts are slowly coming together. And that was kind of a long, not that helpful answer, was it?
No, it was.
Have you been to any of the Community That Cares meetings?
I have been to one. All I know is where I've been.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was at the hospital. So I don't know which one that is.
Was, that's the Communities That Care
okay.
And Celebrating Healthy Communities.
And then I was also at an early one at the rec center.
Yeah, and I think I remember seeing you, so that was more.
That was a real. That sounds like the more like the library group because it was pretty broad on pastors and just people, a couple people from government, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think the more that we do this work, the more we're recognizing it tends to be the same stakeholders and individuals in the community who are involved in this, and we're trying to be efficient with time and recognize that all of these issues are interconnected. So yeah, there are different meetings for different groups right now, but the goal is to bring them closer together over time.
Thanks.
Sure, but Kate can always answer your questions about which meeting.
Don't change locations, because that's how I keep it organized.
Yeah, that's actually really good. That's really good feedback. That's how people categorize. Mm.
That's how this one does.
Yeah.
As a person who's not
mm-hmm.
in the middle of it all.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Do you all keep data on the hotline? Measuring whether it's being utilized.
Well, we don't own those data in-house,
okay.
But I think that we do have access to that. We have not yet asked for local numbers on hotline use, but we are starting to convene a group of people who are going to be more focused on data specifically. And so we are starting to think through what are the data that we would like to have that we don't yet have, and then how do we obtain that? We are trying to make sure that our efforts are informed by science.
Yeah.
Okay.
So is the science better? It seems better. Less suicides over the last 6 months or something.
I mean, I think that just crude numbers wise, that is true. Since we have a relatively small population, statistically speaking, it's too early to make a definitive statement about that.
Gotcha.
So we really look at longer-term trends. Since in a population this relatively small, just one or two deaths can really swing something like a rate. So it takes
it did
longer.
Swing it. I mean, we were way above average there for a while.
Yeah, exactly, and that's why. That it's a relatively small population, because we typically express suicide rates in per 100,000 people. We don't have 100,000 people.
Right.
It's fun statistics, but we need a longer time period to make statistically significant determinations.
Gotcha.
Okay. Any other questions on suicide prevention? All right. And then the next item wanted to give an update is our community health assessment and public health improvement plan. The public health improvement plan will be brought to our Board of Health at our next meeting on December 20th, and we will ask them to adopt or approve the public health improvement plan. And then we'll have lots of communication out to the public early in 2019. So probably January, February, have a more extensive version of that that folks can read through. All of that will be posted on our website. And so we'll have not only what our priority areas are for the public health improvement plan, but also some information on goals and objectives that we'll be pursuing as an agency.
So is that a 2-year plan or a 5-year plan?
It's a 5-year plan. Yeah, so that's, I believe in statute that every 5 years we go through the community health assessment and then public health improvement plan process.
Thank you.
So, yeah.
And what emerged as the priorities this time?
I'm sorry.
What emerged as priorities this time? We'll translate.
Well, so it has not been approved by our Board of Health yet, so this is all preliminary, but at least what we hope to have approved by the board will be, let's see, let me make sure I get this right, mental health and substance abuse, social determinants of health, environmental health, and then public health innovation. Okay. And then we will have a more extensive presentation to the county commissioners early in 2019. And then I guess other up and coming news, January 1st, the on-site wastewater treatment system, transfer of title will be in place. So I brought Sherry along just in case there are questions about that. I know the board received a presentation on that, I think, in October. But since we're about to make that official, any questions lingering on that?
How'd your public outreach in the end, who all were you able to reach, how many people?
We didn't count how many people, but Brian has been doing presentations to the realtor group and then individual realtor
companies.
Yeah, we've been to all of the boards of county commission and all three counties. He's been doing a lot of outreach on that, and it's been on our website. And I think part of our presentation was a new permit system that we're putting into place. So we're live and using that permit system, and so now we're able to generate those acceptance documents on there, so we've actually issued our very first one this month officially. So.
And did you view real estate brokers as your primary public to reach out to, or was there also Realtors Association, or
they were the gateway sort of to everyone else because they deal with that the most. We did reach out to title companies and. But yeah, it was really the real estate community that was really the gateway.
Okay, thanks.
I think during the presentation there was a discussion about getting permits available online. Was that something that was coming?
Viewing the permits?
Yeah, for citizens to just log in and be able to pull their septic permits?
It's on the list.
Okay, so it's still coming?
Yeah. Okay. We have some things to work out.
And they were also talking about linking it to the building department, so
yep.
And that's happening.
Yep, we have the GIS data as part of that already, so
good.
The system's working really great.
Good.
My staff is very happy.
So what I understand between those two questions, it sounds like San Juan Basin Health has access to GIS and our building data. What's not available online is similar information to the public as far as clicking on your parcel and finding out the status of the septic permit and what it would, okay,
that's
thanks.
Correct.
So I think those are the topics that we wanted to cover. Are there other questions regarding public health?
Just one thing, this is, you guys might talk about this about every 3 months, but that's not, that's longer than my ability to retain details. And that is, you know, we were talking about public health priorities and it was just ironic. I don't think it was wrong, but it was ironic to me that, one of the things that we have interacted the most with San Juan Basin Health with over the last 3 or 4 years has been related to air and water quality due to emergencies, and it just got me to, you know, the air at the 16 and potentially public and potentially water quality in the river as flooding happens and that kind of stuff. And then also Gold King. And it struck me that in the Gold King, we really took a look at the water well quality issues, and that was a big focus for about that year. And I was just wondering, is there follow-up that the health departments, or health, whatever, public health, is doing it on a regular basis, or was that more like point in time evaluation of well quality?
Let me take that one.
Please. So there was funding available after the 416 fire for those well owners in that valley to have their wells tested for free. We can accept well sample and get those to the state anytime. The well owners have to pay for those. But we've sort of been looking at increasing the awareness for well testing for everyone, because we think that's an important.
And does anyone keep that data, or is it more, I as a well owner have it, and I know my water's good, or I know my water's better used on laundry than internally. Do you guys keep data like that, or not?
That's a good question, and I'm not sure. There are some rules about confidentiality
right.
with that. So I know
okay.
the state keeps it, so
okay.
we might have access to it through the state.
The state, CDPHE?
Water quality control.
Okay, thanks.
So you test for bacteria here?
I honestly can't tell you what the suite of things that are tested for. It's more than bacteria, though.
Oh, it is? Because I thought you did bacteriological tests, but you don't do other constituent testing like heavy metals or fluorides, or you don't test for those at your office?
No, in some of those we send to the state
okay.
lab for
okay.
testing.
So if somebody wanted to take a water sample, they'd still come get a sample bottle from you guys, and then if it's bacteria test, it's $50 still. Or but if you do other, constituents, it goes up from there. Or if you've got to send it to the state, is it more?
Yes.
Okay. All right. But you're not sure how much it is.
No, we just adopted that fee schedule. So
okay.
I don't memorize.
Okay. It's okay. I just wondered because. People might be interested in knowing that, I don't have to take my water to a testing company. I don't even know if there are any here anymore, but they could definitely take it to you and you could send it to Denver. How long does that take, do you know? Okay.
I just wanted to make a comment about, you said that one of the things that you have interacted with public health the most on is environmental health issues, and we certainly recognize that too, and
So one of the priorities for our public health improvement plan that we hope to have the board approve is environmental health. And it's just interesting that I think a lot of environmental health, like the air and water quality, happens behind the scenes, and it's not necessarily top of mind for any of us in the community, because it's not something that you think about every day, but we recognize that those issues are actually really important, making sure that our, you know, we have clean air and clean water here. So that's a reason why we didn't necessarily hear from the community in our assessment survey that's what, you know, a big priority, but we agree that it is, since that's, you know, something that we interact on quite a bit. Any other question?
I don't have any.
Nope.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for your time.
Thanks a lot for coming.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
We're expecting a couple of folks.
Right.
For the next discussion?
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll take a quick break unless there are updates that you may to share.
Sure. Efficient use of time.
We're going to take a quick break. Do you know if Cheryl or Jason or anybody?
Cheryl is going to come, and then I'm stepping in for Megan.
Okay.
So, is anybody going to the homeless event at the fairgrounds this afternoon? I'm going to be there a little while. You're going to be there?
Not this afternoon, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about this evening.
Yeah, this evening. Yeah.
I was planning to.
Okay. I'm going to be there for a little bit.
Yes.
And I have office hours in Ignacio tomorrow.
Yeah.
We'll see if Megan can push that out on the county Facebook page, because I'm not sure that that necessarily hits that. And then we got radio interview on this on the 17th. Is anybody going to the FLC graduation on Saturday? All right. And those were my
are
questions.
Are you going to go to the FLC graduation?
For breakfast. I will probably go to the FLC graduation, because I think generally it's good to have somebody there, but that means spring's on you and Clyde.
I have a friend graduating, and she's not going to walk, so I'm like, well, usually I know two or three people, though.
Yeah. That's all I got.
Okay. All right. So the next topic is the proposed resolution to protect the Plata County citizens' property rights. We received this last week. Do you all want to talk about it, present briefly on what this is?
I can if you'd like me to.
Is that okay? Typically, if someone asks us to do a resolution, we here a presentation, get back some background on it. You want to come up and
sure, I can.
Would you like me?
Anywhere
you want to sit.
I'll tell you, why don't you sit here, because
okay.
I think the microphone will pick you up.
Okay.
Because you'll be facing it.
Introduce yourself.
I'm Judy Spahey, and I live in Bakeville, Forest Lakes. And I presented the property rights, the resolution for protecting the property rights of Plata County citizens, just to all of you three Board of County Commissioners to take a look at it, just because of all the, you know, stuff that's happened since the land use plan was introduced in January. And I know a lot of people are very concerned about how this is gonna affect them and their property and their property rights. So when I read this, I thought, this is, you know, I got this from a friend of mine who had it, and then I tweaked it a little bit, you know, just in some language of it to make it apply, you know, so it applied for all of us over here. And I think it's just a common sense, you know, property rights plan where people are respected then as far as, you know, if somebody comes out to their property, then they have proper notification ahead of time. And, you know, are fully aware of what's happening with their property.
So I guess we've got a copy of it. We've gotten actually multiple copies of it via email.
Okay. And I set up that form on the website just so that people would be able to have an easy way to read it and be able to submit it to all of you guys, you know, at one time, instead of having to sometimes going through the website where you have just the form, you know, that you fill out that doesn't go to you guys.
Right.
You know, for me, I always wonder, does that just get lost in the deep black hole, or does it?
Doesn't usually get lost in a deep black hole.
Sometimes it gets lost.
Sometimes, I mean, you just always think that about those empty forms on websites, you know.
So I guess what I would ask you, if you would, is, you know, is not read the whole thing, but just kind of hit the high points for you in terms of, you mentioned the notification to a property owner, and I'm assuming there's a section here that says something about coming onto person's property for planning purposes without notice or something like that. That's one component. Can you highlight what you view as the biggest or the highlights of the resolution?
Sure.
Just for the record, so someone who's
listening
to this in the future would
gotcha.
Get
so
that.
So you've read it, but you just want to,
Exactly.
Gotcha.
It's when we
do
these things on recording, sometimes it's helpful just to have someone articulate, these are the basic principles that, or whatever we're talking about.
Okay,
yeah, great.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent idea. So it's kind of basically broken down into three different sections. The first, just saying that you guys, if you signed it, that the elected officials and the community planners would engage in these types of planning programs, planning that involves and affects regulation of private property rights, and that individual property ownership constitutes an asset of unique value as well as the foundation of individual liberty for American citizens. And that's just kind of the general overview of what the resolution says. And then it gets more into the details of it, which the second section then is broken out into three bullet points, A, B, and C, which says that in the event that there's any part of the planning and zoning process throughout the, you know, as you guys roll this out, however it looks, that recommendations resulting from that process would not negatively impact any property rights. And then it just says specifically property owners or their value of their private property, and that those affected property owners shall be provided full and timely disclosure notifying them of that their property rights may somehow be infringed, or the value of the property might be affected in some manner, and then be provided full disclosure outlining the rights to be infringed upon, and C, be provided an opportunity to opt out of any rights infringing regulation or policy. So that's the second part of the resolution. And then the third part is where it goes into further specifics about it. That says further affected property owners shall be notified of potential impairments to their rights and their individual written approval before engaging in any of the following: A, reconfiguring of zoning that intensifies or in any way restricts to existing rights; B, implementation of conservation easements or trading of development rights; and C, acceptance of grant money by the above named government entity or their assigned planners, whether from nonprofit organizations, governmental or private funding sources. So that just is a way to cover all of the basis of what property rights should be in regards to how you and the planning staff work together when you roll this out.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Excuse me, I'm still getting more cold.
Any questions, comments?
So I guess often the question is how to move forward when something is tendered to us this route. And I guess just for your information, the parts of this I think are consistent with what we value in terms of property rights and the like. Parts of it are more or different than ways we would communicate or limits that we would, I don't even know if limits is the right word, but there are some assumptions in here that I don't think are assumptions that are shared by everyone, especially, and even everyone affected by land use decisions, like that land use regulations necessarily negatively impact property values or property rights, because in many times, and this is kind of the crux of what I'm hoping our code can do, is that we can actually strengthen the property rights or as it relates to certain uses, so it would add value.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So there's some things in here that are assumptions that regulation is going to hurt my property values, and I think there's a lot of properties in the county that actually would be, their property rights would be fortified in the sense that they wouldn't have to be defended as much, and that property values could be enhanced,
sure,
with that predictability.
Sure. Yeah.
So the broad brush,
okay,
is, I'm not going to get to the broad brush, but I think there's things in here that I recognize that there's some people in La Plata County who feel like, you know what, this, not just some people, I think most people feel like, yeah, I want my property rights defended or and respected.
Right.
I think for me it would be a question of what's the best language to achieve that?
Okay.
And so I guess what I would propose going forward, if it's all right with you guys, is I communicated by email with Judy earlier this week or last week, and she said that the group, the Free Counties, would like to visit with me.
And with all of you. We just haven't had time yet, but yeah.
And so I guess what I would just say is I would like that. That might be a good opportunity to kind of hear exactly what are the highest priorities for you and how can we maybe work something out that may manifest itself in a resolution or may manifest itself in another way in the code.
Okay.
Or something like that, because this isn't the only tool we have,
right,
to make,
right,
that. And it
and
might not even
the language is,
yeah, and it might not even be the best tool. I guess so. I guess from my perspective, I like to follow up with you guys after the holidays, I think you said, and maybe just kind of get a better idea instead of here's a piece of paper, more like, okay, let's talk about nuts and bolts, or let's talk about the priorities and the themes, and then what's the best way for us to help folks feel like they're not their property rights aren't,
right,
at
give
risk.
More reassurances,
yeah,
that
and is
be.
There a way we can accommodate,
yeah,
both?
And that's the main goal, is just to make sure, you know, to give people a little more of that feeling that they're not going to be steamrolled or whatever, you know, those types of things that have been, you know, negatively said, because there is some positive and negative, you know, there's a whole lot to,
right,
this thing, obviously, but it's more, you know, just with the mindset of making people feel like they're not going to just have somebody show up on their property unexpected and, you know, report them in to whatever, and you know what I mean, just to give them a lot more ease of,
yeah, and I need
what's
to,
going on.
I need to get more info on that particular part as,
okay,
well, because, you know, generally speaking, we don't,
on
just
which
go,
particular
we,
part?
So that part, is, when it talked about the going onto the property, I don't know, I'm not familiar exactly with what our practice is, so I need to get some more info about what we do already.
Okay.
Yeah, and
that's
that kind
really
of,
more
so that's,
comparing with other places that have this in place, like up in Denver. I mean, if you take a look at what happens up there sometimes, it's scary to death.
Well,
not that we're going to become like Denver. Hopefully not. But
Cheryl, excuse me, might be able to speak to that, perhaps.
So we do not go onto private property without permission unless we have a court order.
Okay.
At least for planning purposes, the county's a broad organization. I mean, law enforcement stuff, but you specifically mention. Planning agents. Now, I can't tell you that other government representatives won't, because like on law enforcement, if something's happening, yes.
Oh, sure.
Go on.
Yeah.
So
this
as
is
far
more
as
specific to planning.
Yeah, so planning and code enforcement, we do not enter onto private property. The only statute that really gives us the ability to do that is with respect to the enforcement of state statute on invasive weeds.
Okay.
So typically we would, if we wanted to enter onto somebody's property, we would have to get a court order to do that. We have like in, with respect to the county, for instance, this is the extent we go, we own some drones, a drone that would be really helpful for like looking at the burn area. Even that we have solicited and received written permission, and if we don't have it, we don't even fly over the property. So you know, I think we have some very significant protections in place. And in the 20 years I've been doing this, we have never improperly entered onto somebody's property.
Okay. Yeah, and I don't want to say that, like, I'm trying to jump to any conclusions that could have.
Actually, the assessors do go on people's property.
They, for planning purposes, we don't.
No,
but the
not for
assessors
planning, but as far as the county, I have received complaints that assessors, deputies go on to people's property uninvited, so.
But you have to, that has to already be by state statute or court order, and it doesn't.
For the planning stuff.
Yeah, and I'm happy to speak about some of the other legal things if you would like, but it's up to you guys.
Sure. So I agree with what you said, Julie. I'm willing to have that conversation a little bit more deeper, you know, here in the near future with all of you guys.
Great. Yeah. You know, the value stuff that you guys talked about is not really, I mean, there's statements in there, it's not my place to comment on, but just legally, the way that the state constitution and the statute works, private property rights under the law are not the highest priority. They are one priority, but what the land use statutes require is a balancing and weighing of the interests of the community as a whole, as opposed to an individual. And that becomes more of like an equal protection thing that even citizens who don't own property have interest that the board has to consider. And the statutes also requires to consider different environmental things. So it's certainly, and none of us would deny the importance of private property rights, but to say it's of the highest priority would conflict with state law and the Constitution to do that. Then as far as allowing folks to opt out with the whole, that also becomes an equal protection issue. And you know, our representative government, the board is elected to do that. And so some opting out would, I think, could run afoul. And then on the concept of conservation easements, a conservation easement cannot be applied to an individual's real property without them granting that easement. As the owner of the land, they have to actually do that. The county can't create a conservation easement without a property owner's permission. And on trading of development rights, I think that I'm assuming refers to transferable development rights, TDRs, and that is a planning concept that exists where greater density can be created in some areas, and you trade off those densities as between property owners. And again, that is a transaction that the county could have regulations. We don't, but it would happen with cooperation between two private property owners, and the county's regulations would just facilitate it. But again, it's not anything that would really happen without the participation of property owners. So I think it's easy to say, you know, individual written approval for those, we would definitely, that's legally required, we could agree to that. And then as far as notice.
So you're just, sorry if you don't mind me interrupting.
Sure.
You're just saying that that is between two specific property owners, not in general.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. I just wanted to clarify.
And then as far as notice, our current code requires notice, and we give that now to property owners within a certain distance. And so every property owner, and then it's published, but if something's happening in proximity to your property, or the board is looking at regulations that might have either an advantageous or a perceived disadvantage to the property, all of that is noticed in the newspaper. And then sometimes even individualized notice is given to you if you're an adjoining property owner. And so that exists as well. Whether, you know, I think some of these statements that if things are gonna be, property rights are gonna be infringed upon, that kind of turns into a a difficult thing exactly to, you know, what's an infringement to one might be an advantage to another. So that's would, I'm not sure what our criteria would be to figure that out, but so those are kind of the legal red flags that I see in it.
And my understanding is this document largely is something that's been, I would say, has more like a national, I'm not going to say a national focus, but in doing some research, it looked like there were people in Indiana who commented about it, people in Oregon and the like, so maybe their state rules are different, I'm talking about kind of the template this came from, for national application in different communities across the country, so there might be parts of it that would work in one state that wouldn't work in Colorado.
Well, yeah, I mean, it needs to fit in the Colorado Constitution and the CRS, obviously.
So there might, right.
And even in the county,
right.
You know,
right.
Laws, obviously. Yeah, good point.
So how do you guys feel about, at least me taking the first loop back with these folks after the first of the year, whenever I hear back from you, and at that time we'll talk. One of the things is if at a group meeting with more than one commissioner, sometimes it gets, because it's a public meeting and it doesn't flow as well as a meeting with just one commissioner.
Right.
So let's talk about that in the future to see what, you know, your objectives are. Because anything the board would do would be at a public meeting. And so that public aspect of it is covered then. But sometimes from getting something done, mm-hmm. having just one person there is kind of as a conduit with the board.
Right.
Might be better.
Just getting into more of the specifics.
Exactly,
the
Because, I mean, at least from my experience with the district plan stuff, when all three of us have been at a district plan meeting, it's kind of gone very large and hasn't been an opportunity to really talk individually on specific concerns or ideas, haven't been able to really flesh things out.
Right.
When I've shown up to kind of update a district plan group about where we're at in the land use code, it's much more productive in people being able to ask individual questions and that kind of stuff. So
sure.
We can talk after the first of the year, whenever you want to set this meeting up, more about what's the best way to
be
effective.
Great. That'd be great. I appreciate it.
Sure thing. That works for you guys?
That works good.
Sure. Thanks.
Okay. Bueno.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks for your time.
You bet.
Okay. Thanks for coming today.
Jason and Robbie, I think the commissioners have a hard stop today at 10 to follow on meetings and travel time. Is that right?
Yes.
So your presentation, if we can keep it really concise and on point, so we can get the matter here on time.
Yes, sir.
Thanks.
Okay, we're going to discuss the mapping that we talked about last week at the work session. You want to introduce yourself to the director?
Jason Meininger, County Planning Director.
Robbie Overfield, Planner with Planning Perp.
So I provide this via email as well, so you'll have it in your emails. But what we've done based on direction from the board of wanting to see some maps of where development pressure has occurred over the last certain period of time in order to both understand where development pressure is occurring, as well as to potentially understand where development pressure may occur in the future. So based on that, staff went back, reviewed what data we have that's accessible, and determined that we could reasonably map over the past 10 years to give the board an idea of where we've been really from 2008 to 2018. So first staff would propose a 10-year time frame if that works for the board. Going beyond that, there are some benefits. There's also some costs associated with that. So you know, as the board would recall, 2006 through really 2008 was kind of a boom period, and then it tanked. So we saw a lot of pressure during that period. That was also during, so there would be some advantage to that. The disadvantage is our ability to access the data from that far back within the software program. We've done some upgrades and identifying submittals instead of just projects which were approved or denied would become more challenging. So we've missed that gap of projects which were submitted, which were never pursued. So in order to paint a clear picture, staff's proposing a 10-year time frame.
So on that particular thing, the point of this exercise, at least from my perspective, is not to, is the volume, kind of an overview of volume of things. So it seems to me that, or let me just ask this question, it may not include things that were submitted but not pursued, but wouldn't those trends already be reflected in the other things that you are able to measure? So, you know what I'm saying? Like, if for every three things that are submitted but not pursued, one is pursued, wouldn't that scale be reflected in the other data that you have?
Yes, from 2008 forward. If we went back beyond 10 years, it then becomes a little bit less of a complete picture, which is why we're suggesting 10 years.
And just to chime in on that real quickly, the reason that gets difficult is in order to bring the data into the mapping component in the spatial context, you need some sort of unique identifier, right? Something has, like a one has to match to a one in order to bring it in, or else it has to be manual research. We have what's called legacy applications, which are past 10 years, and the further you go into legacy applications, parcel numbers change every time a boundary gets moved or a property gets subdivided. Vacant parcels don't have addresses, and a lot of applications are on vacant property, so it gets a little more tedious to try to get that data and amalgamate it. I think a 10-year time frame would get this to you expeditiously, a little more expeditiously. And then we can just look and look at it in a spatial context, and then the infrastructure over time incrementally, and say what's coming first, the chicken or the egg. And if we have to go past that, we can think about it at a later date and say, okay, how do we get back to the next 10 years? Is that possible? Is it feasible? Is it necessary? So.
And there's no drawback to drawing the line at 10 years, I'm assuming. I mean,
at this point, no. And part of our recommendation is that we establish some kind of clear parameters within which to operate, because this isn't just making a map. You know, it's not taking existing data, putting it onto a map to visually display it. It's actually creating a map, which is a much different process and more in depth, which involves, and Robbie can talk ad nauseum about all the nerdiness involved with the technical aspects. But that seemed like a good place to start. So we'd like to have some clear defining points that we know when we've kind of gotten to a place of completion in order to provide that to the board. So 10-year time frame, if the board's agreeable to that, not hearing any objection. What we would then map would be the three bullets identified under Roman numeral number 3, which would be submitted land use applications for subdivisions, class 1s, class 2 permits, conceptual development plans, minor exempt subdivisions, which are also still subdivisions. And then submitted and approved map amendments, so any changes that the Planning Commission would have made, which would give the board an idea as to where they could reasonably anticipate some future development pressure. So before I move on, we'll stop there.
So with respect to minor exemption subdivisions, technically they're subdivisions, but are they relevant to the question that we're looking at? Because if we're only worried about how much do they contribute to the question of future, likely areas of future growth and the like?
So I'm not sure. So we want to be a little bit more inclusive. I honestly don't think it's going to be very much, but I would hate to predispose what the value would be before we actually look at the data.
Okay.
And it may be that it is irrelevant.
So will you be, I guess one of the things that I could envision being valuable through this is I'll always go back to the first thing, one of our first conversations about land uses, and as you added more layers to that, I think you looked at the area near Bayfield Gem Village, and as you added more layers of, I don't even recall what all the layers were, but for, let's say here's water, here's T3, is that what they need for something, whatever. As you add infrastructure layers, it just kind of, the sensibility of where we were going to see development just revealed itself. And I'm not sure this will do exactly the same thing, but I think it would be helpful to be able to say, you know, look at, here's where the class ones as a group appeared. Separately, here's where the class twos were, here's where the subdivision applications were, and then be able to layer them to pick up trends and patterns. Is that
yes,
feasible? Is that correct?
Yes, and the third bullet we talked about infrastructure, because that's what we're seeing right now driving a lot of growth and development pressure. And also looking at doing it in a time lapse so the board can see by year where those things were occurring.
Yeah, that was the intent is development following this incremental approach to infrastructure. As a phase gets completed, are we seeing applications? Are we seeing applications in anticipation of the phase coming in, kind of that chicken or the egg? And that way we can try to determine, are we just following infrastructure? Or are we planning for infrastructure? Development. So
are you able to, in doing this, also put some scale as to size? So we have an idea, you know, if there's dots on the map, or is it death by a thousand paper cuts, or is it these big hits that are a burden on infrastructure? Are you going to be able to do it that way? Or is it everything just equally depicted?
We can, you know, using dots, for example, if we take blue dots for submitted applications and green dots for approved applications, we could go into a subset and say the larger the dot, the heavier the development pressure in the metadata. It could add a little time to the time frame to complete the project, because we will be going in and kind of creating subsets to the data itself. But those things are possible. We've done mapping exercises like that before. So we can definitely look at it.
Yeah, and I think it would be beneficial. That also becomes a little bit of a judgment call. You know, judging the impact, it becomes a little bit more of, well, how do we determine it? Maybe a 10,000 square foot class two commercial use with only two employees. So there's really kind of minimal impact of the square footage versus a 2,000 square foot with a dozen employees and customers who would have a greater impact. So I think what our proposal would be at this time would be to start with some clear parameters, and then as we have that information, and I think that's what the board was looking for, was, okay, great, what's the next step? And as Robbie starts to develop it, we'll look at the first couple and say, okay, what do we need to do in order to take the information? And that's where I think the mapping becomes really valuable, is it's taking data and it's applying it spatially, so it's putting it on a map so you can actually see where it's going. And then as we start to see where it's going, we can then look at that and say, okay, what else do we need to know in order to help assist the board in making an informed decision? So it may be that we get there, and as we look at this, we say, you know what, this just, a bunch of dots on the map doesn't help us at all other than let us know that there's dots on the map.
The last time we did this, I believe, was 2007, maybe 2008, and we mapped building permits over time and land use applications over time, and instead of just showing all the points, we did more of like a density type of situation. You get that blob, and they're in certain spots. So there's multiple approaches once we get the data put together. That was a pretty valuable exercise for the board, because during that time we had a lot of activity, as opposed to now you hit 2018 and we had a little bit of a lull, but we had pressure with submitted applications. So it'll be an interesting exercise, and I hope the board finds it valuable, and we can piggyback off it, add the development suitability to it, we can add other information to it. Overlay it and say, you know, how does it correlate with where other layers believe it's prime for suitability or not. So.
And just to make sure we're on the same page, going back to the overview and kind of the objective of this is really to determine where development pressure has occurred over the past, you know, in the past 10 years, in order to potentially anticipate where future development will be occurring. So as we go through this, that's the lens that we'll be looking through as to, is this data actually helpful in answering that question? So that's kind of that will be our go back to point as we look at this. Is that helping us understand the history in order to potentially anticipate the future?
Yeah, and that seems like valuable information, not just for us, but also for some of the folks who are engaged in district planning as well. That I think, at least in my mind, I have like the anecdotal, where would the hot spots Julie would put on a map, they may not be close to reality. So it'll be nice to have some objective information that just says, hey, this is where the applications are coming from, and or where the applications are looking to be used. And I hope it will be helpful too in helping in terms of us getting a sense of being able to draft a code that matches what we're seeing, as opposed to speculation, I guess.
Or manages what we're seeing.
Yeah, well, and helps improve that situation as well.
It would be pretty easy to break it down by district, so to get that information to the district, so the Planning Commission, as they're working through it, that's a pretty simple operation.
And the other thing that just as a, one of the things that there's the pluses and minuses of a map, and a map, you know, the plus is it helps you visualize really where things are going, or whatever, it helps you visualize what you're asking of the map. But, you know, I think it also depends on your perspective. From my perspective, not even as a commissioner, but as a resident and a property owner, I kind of like to know what's going on in my neighborhood and what the trends are. But I also don't want the map to be viewed as, this is what the county's going to do next. Because the reality is it's just information at this stage that will inform decisions we would make. But also, I mean, I was selling real estate, and as you know, someone could look at it and say, oh my gosh, look, my this property that's in this bubble is now, this means this is, I'm gonna get some extra value to my property because of this. So when a person lists it for sale or decides they wanna do something, this map, they're going to look at this map and rely on it potentially. I just think it's important that we say we this is an informational map for us to make decisions. This is not some kind of proposed land use map. This is not even any, to me, this is just a piece of information that can help people in our shoes particularly and in the district planning, but it's not some kind of foregone conclusion as to what next land use designation or a code or anything else is going to look like.
I think the intent was just to provide another tool or a lens to add to the rest of the information, the data points that the commission is looking at. You know, it's definitely not going to be intended to mimic a market trend or anything.
Right,
like
exactly.
That.
That's my another concern.
Yeah, market trends are very different. What's sold, how long things have been on the market,
right.
How market trends, you know, moved in the past few years, proximity to infrastructure, certain types of the data points. Obviously, those pieces of information could be looked at a future date if so desired, but again, this is just a tool to get the wheels churning.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be valuable outside of our context, but also folks need to be realistic about what it really is.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, cool.
The final thing, which is the timeline, pulling all of this together, at this point, we estimate 45 to 60 days in order to actually have the maps ready for the board.
There's going to be a lot of manual entry. Like Jason alluded to, this isn't pulling the existing information and joining it with the click of a button. This is going into historical permit data and trying to create something that we really don't have yet. So there may be margins of error, which we put in the timeline. We have to understand that there will be margins of error in any data collection. And we're going to try to keep that as low as possible, and we can track that in the metadata. If you're missing 10 or 20 points out of 2,000, that's pretty good. You're still going to have a good comparative analysis. There's always going to be things that will slip through the cracks, and hopefully we can mitigate that as much as possible. But there's a lot of things to consider. And so the last thing staff wants to do is overpromise and underdeliver. So.
Okay, and is there any ability, does it make, so you went back 10 years, is there any, does it help with the volume of manual work necessary if we only went back 8 years or 6 years, or are we talking about such a short time frame at that point that it might not be as valuable as, just trying in terms of cost benefits?
Mm-hmm. The more years that we add, the more time that it takes. We had talked about 5 years. Our concern was that wouldn't be representative enough. I mean, we could start at five and then go back to bring that to the board, but we wanted to look at it and say, what would be the greatest amount? Like, where's kind of the break point where beyond 10 is just significantly more work for minimal returns? five would certainly be able to be done more quickly and would at least give the board an idea as to where those things were. And if that's something that the board was interested in, that would certainly speed up the time frame as well.
Yeah, the intent's going to be, the data is going to be gathered annually. I'm going to try to gather it year by year so that way we can do a little snapshot and say this is what's happened, click through the years.
What we could do, and we'd start with 17 since that's a completed year and we're close to the completion of 18, so you know, the, whatever, 2 weeks or so, we'll be able to have a complete 18. So we could start at 17 and work back, and if we determine that there's a point where we reach diminishing returns, if you'd like, we could come back to the board and another BDT and say, you know, we proposed 10 years. As we're getting into this, really at 6 years, we really start to experience a little significantly increased manual labor investment. Do you want us to continue doing that to keep to this time? Do you want to stop at, and I'm just saying 6 years as just a arbitrary reference point. Yeah, we could look at the next 5 years and we could bring that back to the board, or we could go to 10, or we could look at, do we reach a point of diminishing returns somewhere in there where we may say, you know, at 6 years we've got a pretty good data set, do you really need the additional 4 years?
Yeah. I mean, I'm fine being flexible, depending on what you guys find out.
Yeah, we'll make our best judgment call.
Yeah, I think kind of working backwards is wise, because at some point, like you said, you may just kind of go, not worth going back another 3 years.
Yeah, that diminishing returns is a good break point.
I could try to pull the last project we did that showed 2006 to 2008. That was, you know, 12 years ago when we started. If that data still exists, we could just use that as a separate math and say, hey, here's what we did last time, so we're not recreating the wheel.
That actually would be helpful to have that.
Yeah, I'll see if
Chuck has a
second. A couple of comments real quick. So what you may not know is that we're working closely with the college to try and establish an internship program between Fort Lewis and La Plata County. To do that, it requires very discrete projects. This sounds like a very discrete project, and so my question is there any value, or would there be any value to you if we could try to quickly craft something and bring in some GIS interns to help with this, or with the training and ramp up time? Because you're estimating 2 months as it is. Would it not be beneficial to you to try to bring someone in, or is that something that you think we should pursue?
I think the methodology is pretty straightforward, as long as they understand the manual component. I think a lot of the folks that are, you know, my experience teaching at Fort Lewis and working with Lauren and Scott up there in the program is they do have a boilerplate template for what they're teaching their students. You know, we would go up there with the intent of, when we teach, that this is how GIS applies to the county, and it's very different than what you learn institutionally. I think it would definitely be an opportunity to explore, to try to get them in pretty quickly would obviously be the best scenario, but
Well, think about that, and let's you and I talk.
With you on that.
Yeah, because sure. There's potential there, and GIS is one of the specific areas that we've talked with the Fort about creating an internship program with, and this might just be a great launching point to get that going.
And if not this, just real quick, and if this doesn't work right now, that's really good to know as a resource, so that as we look forward, start to develop other similar types of projects.
Yeah, we just have to be careful. The internship program is not to bring in students to like scan and file and shred. I mean, there needs
that
to be academic
education.
Yeah, okay. My second question is, also talk with Mike Hawkins from IT, mm-hmm. because there may be a way that Laserfish can automate some of the workflow in the background, mm-hmm. to speed up some of this manual.
Yeah, so I'll be asking for some key identifiers from him, so I can, instead of just trying to use one, I can have five to pick and choose from.
Yeah.
So definitely post
it. And then the last thing, it says 45 to 60 days. Is that taking into account Christmas, New Year's, Martin Luther King?
Yes, yeah, 45 to 60 days, calendar days from today.
I mean, we're just heading into a period where we're going to have a lot of downtime. So.
Yeah, I guess I don't feel like the lack of the maps is going to delay us on other things we have to take into consideration as we move forward on land use code topics like
1041, still have that scheduled, so we're still going to continue on the other tracks that we have, and then develop this concurrently with that as well.
Yeah.
And that time frame is, you know, it is longer than we want, ideal in a perfect world. But also, really, we spent some time, and that, I mean, this was, you know, coming up with, you know, a page and a half of, you know, what we're proposing is kind of the easy part. It's all of the work of, well, how much workload do we have? Where are we at with staff and capacity in order to be able to do this? So, I'm comfortable with the 45 to 60 days, and as Robbie said, I'd rather under-promise and over-deliver, and if we can get back to the board in 30 to 45, that'll be great. But I don't want to say 30 to 45 and we come back in 60.
Understood. Thanks. That's all I have. Thanks.
So if the board is comfortable with where we're at, Robbie, do you have any other questions for the board relative to direction that you would need right now?
No, I think anything that, any questions I have, I can run by Jason. It's a pretty straightforward process right now. I think once we get into the details of splitting this information out, it's a matter of, as Commissioner Westendorf alluded to, trying to delineate the differences between subdivisions, class ones, class twos, conceptual plans, map amendments. You know, how are we going to display it? Are we going to show it separately together, a few different maps incrementally? You know, trying to get information from La Pod to see if we can get their phased layers so we can kind of put them in piece by piece as we move along back in time. That will be very beneficial if we can do it. So there's a couple unknowns, but I don't think it's going to change the outcome or the output. So we'll just work at that as we get to it.
Okay.
Thanks for the opportunity.
That's great.
Thank you very much.
Very helpful.
Sure.
Yes.
Any other questions for Jason or Robbie?
Nope.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thank
guys.
You.
Do we need a break?
No.
It's
thanks for asking.
Quick updates.
I already gave mine.
Okay, and I don't have any.
Sure.
No. Okay. Joanne.
Following up the last conversation we had about the multi-density master plan, I've spoken to DHM. They are delighted to reiterate with us on the scope of work. I'm going to review it with Chuck today. I hope to have them under contract by the end of the week and have a kickoff meeting with Zaharan and the city next week, certainly by Christmas. So full steam ahead, all very excited.
Great.
Thank you.
Good.
Thanks for following up on that.
All right.
I just wanted to touch base with you. We had sent an email to the board about the protection of consumer data and privacy. There was some new legislation that's gone into effect, and part of the email related to requiring speakers during meetings to give their personal addresses. And our recommendation is to no longer require that specific information unless it's very relevant to the conversation. I think it's fine to ask people in general, you know, what area of the county do you live in, or, you know, if someone's a neighbor, but just to routinely require addresses kind of when you compile that with other information we might have about people, then every piece of data we may then have to protect. And so our strategy is just to try not to collect things that we don't need.
Okay.
And so, you know, it's not that we can't ever ask for addresses, and I'm gonna advise the Planning Commission and some of the other boards and commissions we have of the same information. So unless you have any questions or concerns about that, I'm gonna go ahead and move forward.
In practice, it seems most relevant in planning situations. So instead of saying I live at, you know, 422 Animas View Drive, well, the person would say I live about 500 yards from the project, or
yeah,
I live down
I live
the street
County
from
Road
the
250. I live in the north planning area. I mean, any like regional stuff is just fine, and sometimes, you know, does certainly go to the credibility of whoever the witness is. You know, do they drive by it every day,
right,
as opposed to you know, living in Arizona, I mean, sometimes
because we really don't care what the number of the street is. Yeah. What we care about is how close do you live.
Yeah.
That type of thing.
Rarely do we really need to know what your actual address is.
If you want us to mail you something.
Right.
And that doesn't have to be on the record.
Yeah. And, you know, similarly on the pink slips, once those are filled out, then that's the data that we're keeping,
right.
And do we really need it? You know, is it enough that someone just, you know, has their name there, and maybe that they live in Bayfield or Allison or Durango or,
So what if there might be people in a context who would say, I want follow-up communication.
Yes.
After this,
mm-hmm.
from planning department or something like that. Let's figure out the best way to handle that. We don't need to get it now. But if it comes in on a pink slip, does that mean,
usually they do it by email.
Whatever. I guess my point is just there. We can't assume that we need to identify where we might need it and how we'll handle
that. I think some out of, you know, if someone wants specific follow-up, what might be best is that they give their information, like, to Jan. The pink slips become part of the record and possibly even our judicial record to support it. And so, you know, as opposed to someone just writing it on a sticky, giving it to Jan, they're then contacted, but then the sticky is disposed of.
Let's reformulate the pink slip, because sometimes that's a place we
drop
the ball, is we don't update our forms.
Yeah.
So, like, narrative continues to be spelled wrong in IQM too, but hey, I'm the only one who bothers, so my jab in the ribs every time. Okay,
that's all I have at the moment.
Okay. Jeff?
Quickly, just a reminder, next week on Tuesday, you've got a regularly scheduled business meeting, but then on the 20th, you've also got the special business meeting to certify the mill levies.
Yes.
Between Wednesday and Friday, we have a number of meetings with Patrick Rondinelli from DOLA. He's going to be in town starting today. We're going to talk about a grant opportunity to try and fund the weather radar for the region. So that's today at 2, I believe. And then on Friday, he will be here talking with staff about the grants for the renovation of the armory building that we submitted. Just follow-up questions pursuant to that application. And then a reminder for everyone that I will be out of the office on Friday completing my leadership plata, second year obligation to host, co-coordinate the government class, and it's going to be held at the Breeden Community Center.
All right.
We're trying to get the, it's leadership plata, not leadership Durango, so we're trying to drive home that point by having the class go out to Breeden. So.
Yeah, nice. I'll see you there.
Yes.
Can somebody remind me where we're at with search and rescue building application? I can't remember if it's one we submitted already.
We haven't.
Okay.
So what we have done based on Patrick's guidance is the grant application that we submitted for the December 1st cycle was submitted on December 3rd, the due date. So that's in. Patrick's coming this Friday to ask follow-up questions to that grant application. Within the narrative for the armory, renovation of the armory building. And the narrative, we talked about the master plan, the 2012 Blythe report, and we've talked about how this is a key component to completing that master plan. And in there, we also talked about the search and rescue building potential to be placed on that property, because we know that we're going to apply for that grant in the April cycle. This grant will be reviewed and considered the week before the April applications are due. So we're planting the seed now to tell them that we're not asking for this now, we're asking for the armory renovation, and come April we're going to ask for the second component for the search and rescue building that's also going to be on that property.
So it's included in the budget, 2019 budget,
yes.
But that project is, you know, 100% contingent on that grant match. If that grant doesn't come through, that project would not move forward next year.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Understood.
Mm-hmm. That's all that I have.
Okay. Anything else?
All right. So we're at.
Oh, me.
Just a suggestion. When we were talking the other day on the 4th, I believe, anyway, we discussed how to get information out to people. And not all people, but most people get property tax envelopes in January. I know some people pay theirs monthly or whatever, but most people get it there. if you only had one sheet of paper that had that you wanted information about, survey, whatever, you could slip it in there. I mean, I don't know what you'd have to weigh it to see if it was going to cost you more postage, but I just, after the meeting, I'm like, wow, we all get property tax things.
Only the lucky ones.
Well, I guess that's a better perspective. Yes, I guess I'm a lucky one, yes. Anyway, just a thought. Thanks.
That's a good point.
Okay, thanks.